Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have a lengthy number of local updates followed by stories from our media partners. This is KMUD News. As you may have noticed, it's really hot out there. The National Weather Service has heat advisories in place throughout our region, with the current alert lasting until 11 p.m. on Thursday. Temperatures of up to 105 to 110 degrees, especially for interior valley locations, are expected in Humboldt, Mendocino, and Trinity counties. Areas on the immediate coast, like Arcata and Fort Bragg, will be far cooler and closer to average temperatures. Many areas will hit triple digits and did starting today, Tuesday, August 4th, and heat-related illnesses are likely. It's a good time to check in on elderly neighbors and those with health conditions and to stay out of the sun. The current heat wave is expected to last until Sunday, when temperatures will return to normal in most locations. From the North Coast Air Quality Management District, upper-level smoke from fires in Oregon and Washington may drift down into northwestern California and into our region. Widespread haze and any smoke impacts will be more evident in parts of Del Norte County and along the Humboldt coast. Smoke impacts are forecast to be widespread haze with an air quality index level of good to moderate in most locations. All members of the public, especially those with respiratory or heart disease, the elderly, pregnant women, and children should remain alert, and if necessary, reduce or avoid all outdoor exertion when wildfire smoke is present. Everyone else should limit prolonged exertion in areas of noticeable smoke accumulation. All individuals are urged to use proper judgment when planning activities. An alert from the Redway Community Services District. RCSD has determined, based on current source supply and operational conditions, that it cannot reliably assure all ordinary water demands can be met without immediate conservation. The Miranda Gauge is currently not providing sufficient information for RCSD to rely on it as the sole indicator of available supply. Here are the new mandatory daily use limits for those in Redway. For residential customers, you are limited to 60 gallons per resident per day. For commercial and industrial customers, you are limited to 400 gallons per account per day. All Stage 1 and Stage 2 restrictions remain mandatory, including outdoor watering only between 6 p.m. and 10 a.m. for no more than 10 minutes per area. Odd-numbered addresses can water on Wednesday and Sunday. Even number addresses can water on Tuesday and Saturday. Businesses can water outside on Monday and Thursday. No irrigation runoff is allowed onto streets, sidewalks, parking lots, alleys, or neighboring properties. Do not wash sidewalks, driveways, parking areas, or other hard surfaces except for an immediate health or fire hazard. Vehicle washing is only permitted at a commercial car wash that recycles water. All hoses must have shut-off nozzles and repair leaks promptly. Hotels must post emergency notices. Restaurants can only serve drinking water when requested. Water use priorities are for human consumption, sanitation, and fire protection. For questions or health and safety relief requests, you can contact the Redway Community Services District at 707-923-3101. From the Cal Poly University Police. On Tuesday, August 4th, at approximately 1 a.m., an officer with the Cal Poly Humboldt University Police Department was conducting a property check on university-owned land when they observed a vehicle parked on Jackson Ranch Road in an area posted as not allowing parking during nighttime hours. The officer contacted the vehicle's occupant, who is identified as 46-year-old Colin Baldridge of Eureka. During the contact, the officer determined Baldridge was on felony probation for narcotic sales and subject to a probation search condition requiring him to submit to searches of his person and vehicle. During the probation search, the officer located approximately 40 grams of suspected cocaine inside the vehicle. The suspected cocaine was packaged into multiple individual baggies. Officers also located digital scales and packaging materials consistent with the sale of narcotics. Baldridge was arrested and booked into the Humboldt County Correctional Facility on charges of possession of narcotics for sale and violation of probation. He is being held without bail. The investigation is ongoing. Anyone with additional information is encouraged to contact UPD at 707-826-5555. From the City of Eureka. The City of Eureka will be performing emergency work to repair a damaged traffic sensor located near the intersection of Harris and S Street. The work will commence at 10 a.m. on August 5th and will last approximately 2 to 3 hours. Eastbound Harris Street will be temporarily closed at R Street with detour routes in effect to safely navigate the closure. Westbound Harris Street will not be affected. Harris Avenue is a heavily traveled route within the city, and the safety of pedestrians, motorists, and construction workers are important. Please use alternate routes if possible, slow down, and be careful. The patience and cooperation of motorists, bicyclists, and pedestrians in the vicinity of the work zone is greatly appreciated. In Trinidad, according to reporting by the Lost Coast Outpost, there is now a privately owned Flock camera in Trinidad at the intersection of Scenic Drive and West Haven, close to Moonstone Beach. The owner is resident Kevin Kaufman, who stated in the article, quote, "There's a lot more working class than they're letting on about, and some of their kids aren't doing real good in school, so I see that the demographic is a lot more diverse, a lot more mixed. There's more people at the bottom than there are at the top, in contrast to some of the other ritzier neighborhoods down in the Bay Area," end quote. Needless to say, xenophobia and AI surveillance seem to go hand in hand. Kaufman also moved to Humboldt from the Bay Area last year. The Humboldt Sheriff's Department operates a total of 9 Flock cameras, 7 in fixed locations, and 2 mobile units. Those with private cameras can opt to share their data with law enforcement agencies, and do in many cases. Although it is unconfirmed if Kevin Kaufman is sharing data directly with law enforcement through an agreement. That said, even if there is no agreement, it is highly likely law enforcement could gain access to data from the camera via a variety of situations. From the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office. On July 31st, at approximately 2:30 p.m., a Mendocino County Sheriff's deputy contacted Benjamin Miller in the area of Tomkey Road and Cave Creek Road in Redwood Valley. Miller was being sought in connection with several ongoing burglary investigations and had a misdemeanor warrant issued for his arrest for destruction of evidence. Upon contact with the sheriff's deputy, Miller fled the scene in a Dodge SUV. The vehicle was later located and seized as evidence in connection with the ongoing investigations, but Miller fled the area and was not located. A search warrant for the vehicle was subsequently authorized by a Mendocino County Superior Court judge. During the execution of the search warrant, sheriff's deputies recovered personal property and documents associated with Miller, along with live ammunition. Sheriff's deputies determined that Miller was prohibited from owning or possessing firearms and ammunition due to prior criminal convictions. Based on evidence gathered during the investigation, sheriff's deputies obtained an arrest warrant for prohibited person in possession of ammunition and a search warrant for a residence in Willits that was associated with Miller. On August 1st, at approximately 4 a.m., the Mendo Lake Regional SWAT team served the search warrant at a residence on East San Francisco Avenue in Willits. There was a brief standoff where Miller initially refused to exit the residence, but he was later arrested without further incident. During the search of the residence, sheriff deputies recovered multiple firearms, ammunition, and firearm accessories. Among the firearms recovered was an SKS rifle that sheriff's deputies are examining as possible evidence related to an ongoing residential burglary investigation. Miller was transported to the Mendocino County Jail, where he was booked on a felony warrant for prohibited person in possession of ammunition, a misdemeanor warrant for destruction of evidence, along with new charges of prohibited person in possession of a firearm, prohibited person in possession of ammunition. Miller remains in custody and is being held in lieu of $37,500 bail. From Trinity County Public Health. Trinity County Public Health is proud to join communities around the world in celebrating World Breastfeeding Week, August 1st to 7th. This year's theme, Breastfeeding for a Sustainable Start in Life, Strengthen What Works, highlights the importance of building successful breastfeeding support systems to improve the health and well-being of babies, families, and communities. Breastfeeding gives babies the healthiest possible start by providing complete nutrition, strengthening the immune system, and supporting healthy growth and brain development. It also benefits mothers by promoting recovery after childbirth and reducing the risk of certain chronic diseases. Every family deserves access to accurate information, compassionate support, and resources to help them meet their infant feeding goals. In Trinity County, the Health and Human Services Agency is committed to supporting parents throughout their breastfeeding journey by providing education, one-on-one support, referrals to lactation resources, and evidence-based information through the Women, Infants, and Children program. Whether breastfeeding for a few days, a few months, or longer, every family's journey is unique. Trinity County Public Health is committed to ensuring that parents have the support they need to make informed feeding decisions that are right for their families. For more information about breastfeeding resources and Trinity County services, please contact Trinity County Health and Human Services Agency at 530-623-1358. Next is news from Cal Poly Humboldt. 4 years after releasing its Climate Action Plan 2.0, Cal Poly Humboldt continues to show measurable progress towards its goal of becoming a carbon-neutral campus by 2045. According to a newly released progress report, the university has reduced net greenhouse gas emissions by 32% since the first Climate Action Plan was released in 2017. With 58% of the plan's actions completed. Campus emissions are decreasing due to using less natural gas while increasing the percentage of purchased electricity from eligible renewable sources, improvements in fleet vehicle efficiency, the purchase of carbon credits to offset emissions from university travel, the increased adoption of sustainable transportation options, and other factors. Natural gas is the largest source of direct emissions, followed by electricity, highlighting the importance of improving campus energy systems and efficiency. The progress reflects nearly a decade of sustained work following the university's decision to sign the Second Nature Climate Commitment. The commitment called on the university to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, integrate climate adaptation into campus planning, and regularly update its climate action strategy. Humboldt's first climate action plan, released in 2017, outlined strategies to reduce facility and fleet emissions to 1990 levels by 2020, a goal the university achieved. The Climate Action Plan 2.0 expanded that vision, creating a roadmap to carbon neutrality by 2045. The Climate Action Plan includes 148 actions needed to achieve 35 strategies focused on 6 areas. Buildings, energy and fuels, transportation, solid waste and purchasing, carbon sequestration and offsets, academics and research, and climate resilience. One of the progress report's most significant findings is that the university's largest emissions reduction projects are now moving from planning into implementation. The buildings, energy and fuels section of the plan is nearly 2/3 complete. The report highlights several high-impact initiatives now underway, including replacing natural gas boilers with higher efficiency systems like electric heat pumps, expanding campus solar energy generation and battery storage through a solar microgrid, and building to LEED Gold green building standards. Together, these infrastructure investments are expected to produce some of the university's largest future reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. The report also shows substantial progress across nearly every area of campus operations. 73% of actions focused on academics and research have been completed. For example, the university has advanced efforts to integrate sustainability throughout the curriculum, expand sustainability research, and strengthen Humboldt's role as a leader in climate education. Solid waste and purchasing has also advanced rapidly, with 72% of actions completed. Recent accomplishments include implementation of the university's Zero Waste Action Plan, expanded sustainable purchasing practices, increased construction waste diversion, and efforts to reduce the embodied carbon of building materials. Transportation initiatives continue to make progress as well. More than 60% of transportation actions have been completed, including improvements to campus walkability and bikeability, expanded alternative transportation programs, and support for public transit. These efforts are designed to help meet the university's goals of reducing commute emissions 50% below 2015 levels by 2030 and eliminating them entirely by 2045. The report also tracks progress beyond carbon reduction. Climate resilience initiatives, including emergency preparedness, stormwater management, ecosystem restoration, food and housing security, and climate adaption education, are helping prepare the campus to withstand and recover from climate-related disruptions. This fall, the university will begin updating Climate Action Plan 2.0 as required under the Second Nature Climate Commitment. Through a combination of working groups like the Humboldt Advisory Committee on Sustainability and open forums, the process will engage students, faculty, staff, tribal nations, local governments, community organizations, and other partners in refining the university's goals, strategies, and actions for the years ahead. The updated plan will also evaluate emerging technologies and new approaches that can further improve campus infrastructure, operations, programs, and services while advancing equity and resilience. Next, from the County of Mendocino. The County of Mendocino is encouraging businesses that experienced losses from the June 24th earthquake to complete and submit a U.S. Small Business Administration damage survey form. Based on responses to the county's initial damage survey, the county is working with the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services to pursue an SBA disaster declaration that could make financial assistance available to eligible local businesses. Businesses that experienced uninsured losses are encouraged to submit the one-page form. Examples of eligible impacts include physical damage to buildings or equipment, loss of inventory or stock, business interruption or loss of income, and other uninsured earthquake-related losses. Businesses do not need to apply for an SBA loan to submit the form. Reporting estimated losses does not obligate a business to seek financial assistance. Instead, the information helps document the overall impact of the earthquake and strengthens the county's request for federal disaster assistance, potentially benefiting other local businesses that may need recovery financing. Forms must be submitted by Monday, August 10th. To learn more and to submit completed forms, please email disasterrecovery@mendocinocounty.gov. The county encourages all affected businesses to participate. Every response helps ensure the full economic impact of the earthquake is documented and supports efforts to bring additional recovery resources to Mendocino County. In Garberville, the El Cora Mexican restaurant has responded online after being temporarily closed due to multiple health code violations, including cockroaches in the kitchen. The restaurant owner stated in the post, quote, "I would like to address what recently happened at my restaurant. I appreciate everyone who has taken the time to share their thoughts, whether positive or negative. For some time now, I have been dealing with ongoing harassment from an individual who has made false reports, resulting in inspectors and police coming to my restaurant. I have never done anything to this person, yet their actions have caused unnecessary stress and hardship for both me and my employees. Despite these challenges, my team and I remain committed to providing the best service and experience possible for every customer who walks through our doors. We truly appreciate your continued support and understanding during this difficult time." End quote. The restaurant is slated to reopen on Wednesday. Many in the comment section below the post offered sympathies and expressed viewpoints that roaches are a long-time issue in downtown Garberville and are a constant nuisance that are unrelated to El Cora and its food handling practices. And up next, stories from our media partners. This is KMUD News. Trump continues push for SAVE Act, requiring voter ID and limiting mail-in ballots. KPFA reports.
Today, Trump wrote in a social media post, John Thune should not allow the U.S. Senate to leave town until it passes the Save America Act, or, far better still, terminates the filibuster, where Republicans can then quickly pass everything they ever dreamed of, end quote. While Democrats have unanimously rejected the Save America Act, Trump has used every opportunity to tout it, including when he was interviewed on NBC about the passing of Senator Graham.
He said, we're all set for the Save America Act. He was pushing the Save America Act like crazy.
On July 16th, Trump insisted that the Save America Act was necessary to protect American democracy during his primetime address.
Congress must pass the Save America Act. How easy is that to do unless you want to cheat? The only reason you wouldn't do it is you want to cheat because your policies are so bad and your candidates are so pathetic that you can't get away or can't get elected any other way. This landmark bill requires that all voters must show photo voter ID. How simple is that? Could I have your photo, please? Photo voter ID. All voters must provide proof of citizenship. Are you a citizen of our country, please?
He also said he'd push for the end of all mail-in ballots except for active duty service people and those with extreme special circumstances.
If you watched California and so many other places, mail-in ballots are inherently corrupt.
That claim is unsubstantiated. On July 22nd, the House passed a $95 billion budget proposal, with $73 billion designated for the Pentagon's security needs, like the war with Iran, $12 billion for farmers experiencing the ripple effects of Trump's tariff policies, and another $10 billion for voting law changes, like the controversial Save America Act. While Trump refers to the Save America Act as a simple measure that no one would oppose unless they're cheating, many Americans say it could ultimately keep them from voting. The U.S. Department of State shows that only about half of Americans have a valid passport. Nearly 10% of voters do not have their birth certificate in hand. Denise Witzig is a feminist scholar based in Oakland. She says the Save America Act has the potential to disenfranchise many vulnerable populations, including people who've been adopted, transgender folks who've elected to change their name, and most ironically, married women.
But women aren't the only population that it will impact, obviously. Trans folks and people who have been adopted and who have changed their names, or people who have just changed their names for their own reasons. We're allowed to do that. And if we don't have a kind of so-called paperwork that indicates a kind of a match-up to our names at birth, this will provide a hindrance.
Witzig says there's a particular irony when it comes to married women.
The Republican Party is the quote-unquote traditionalist party, the party that stands, I would say, for a patriarchal standard in terms of gender relationships and supporters of marriage. And so women who comply with the patriarchal standards or who are traditionalists or for whatever reason, if they cannot prove that their names have been changed from what their birth certificates say, then they will not be allowed to vote.
Kimiora Ward is from the Sacramento area.
We'll lose 70 million voters, 9 to 1, that will be women.
Ward says this is not an accident, but instead something that has been in the making for 4 decades.
They're not making it up as they go. They've been planning this for 40 years. The Heritage Program has been chipping away at this issue, and we have been losing our rights for 40 years and losing our money. $15 trillion have gone from the bottom to the top 1%. Reckless and intentionally so.
Terry and Martha Ford are proud grandparents of 3 children, but they've also become activists.
Obviously, we're here because of women. And women have, to me, a clear understanding of the propriety of things, of how we should be acting. Keep us out of war, perhaps.
If the Save America Act were to pass, Martha Ford, who took her husband's last name, would be impacted.
If anybody is being attacked or jailed or killed. I mean, it affects on all of us. And that money from our taxes goes to bomb girls' schools anywhere. It's our money. And so, you know, we're responsible for it too. And we need to speak up and say, we don't like it. We don't agree. We need a change.
Well, she might be able to handle the logistics of proving her identity and American citizenship. She knows that not everyone else will. And she says we can't afford not to have women's voices represented in elections. For Pacifica, KPFA Radio, I'm Sharon Sabota.
Community health workers help families navigate Medi-Cal changes. Suzanne Potter reports.
The changes to Medi-Cal are coming fast and furious, but California funds a network of thousands of community health workers, also known as promotoras, to help low-income families understand their health insurance options. A few years ago, the state added these services as a benefit in Medi-Cal, which is the Golden State's Medicaid program. Mar Velez, policy director with the Latino Coalition for a Healthy California, says they're trusted bilingual messengers who can lay out the changes clearly.
Community health workers, promotoras de salud, are the lifeline to our community to be able to adhere to these new burdensome requirements. We need to ensure that they continue to be funded, protected from any state cuts.
Republicans in Congress passed huge cuts to Medicaid last summer and put the savings toward immigration enforcement and tax cuts. As a result, starting in January, people on Medi-Cal will have to follow new work requirements and recertify their eligibility every 6 months. California froze new enrollment for undocumented families starting last January. Starting next July, many undocumented families will lose dental coverage and have a new copay for medical visits. Nora Behil is a patient service advocate with Lifelong Medical Care in Berkeley, trained by the advocacy group Visión y Compromiso. She says the immigration crackdown has many families running scared.
One of the problems that we have now in the clinic is that they don't want to come to be assisted because they are afraid that we are connected with immigration. People, they are afraid to be deported.
In addition, federal cuts to the SNAP program mean many low-income families are losing access to CalFresh food assistance. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Brianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605. Or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, a national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Sikyone, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.